This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the Creating Wealth Show with Jason Hartman. You're about to learn a new slant on investing, some exciting techniques, and fresh new approaches to the world's most historically proven asset class that will enable you to create more wealth and freedom than you ever thought possible. Jason is a genuine self-made multimillionaire who's actually been there and done it. He's a successful investor, lender, developer, and entrepreneur who's owned properties in 11 states, had hundreds of tenants, and been involved in thousands of real estate transactions. This program will help you follow in Jason's footsteps on the road to your financial independence day. You really can do it. And now, here's your host, Jason Hartman, with the complete solution for real estate investors.
So you've heard my rants about how our financial system is rigged, and I've interviewed hundreds of experts to back up those claims and help you align your investments with the most powerful forces in the world, governments and central banks. I'm also using a perpetual wealth strategy with my income property investments that you should check out. It has enhanced the security of my liquid assets, boosted overall ROI, and shifted money away from the banksters. My friend Pat Donahoe, who's one of our Venture Alliance members, runs Paradigm Life, and he has a free report that you can download at beyourbank.com. That's beyourbank.com. Check it out today. Welcome, listeners from around the world, to episode number 869. This is your host, Jason Hartman, who is very happy to be reporting to you today from New York City, more specifically, Queens, New York. Yes, I am back on U.S. soil. I flew from Oslo, Norway to New York last night and made it here. I flew on a beautiful 787 Dreamliner, which I think is the nicest commercial plane in the sky. Of course, when I took the Venture Alliance group last year to Dubai, we went on the A380, also an amazing aircraft. And that one is huge. It's just giant. And the way Emirates does them up, they do a really great job of it. But for my money, I kind of like the Dreamliner the best because it's the most high-tech of them all. It's got a cabin that's pressurized to, I believe, 6,000 feet. You don't get as much jet lag. There's more oxygen in the air. And, well, hey, the air is thicker. In fact, it's so thick, you could cut it with a knife. Not really, of course. But that's how thick the air is in Cairo. When I went to Cairo, Egypt, in my 81-country journey, not recently, this was many years ago, that air is so polluted, you could cut it with a knife. It was disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. But yeah, I'm glad to be back, and I ended my European summer of love, if you will, early. I just kind of got sick of dealing with the European mindset. You know, I have a real love-hate relationship with my birthplace, the continent of Europe, and you kind of have to talk about Europe as one big thing because it's almost like saying the U.S., you know, different states within the U.S. are like the countries in Europe, at least size-wise, right? Of course, culturally, they differ quite a bit, and historically, they differ quite a bit. I completely understand that. But yeah, you know, there are some things I hate about the USA, and some things I love about Europe, and some things that I hate about Europe and love about the USA. Some of the things I do not like very quickly, and I've talked about this before, I've talked about the unemployment rate in Spain and Portugal and Greece and the economic disasters in in all these countries, Italy, don't forget that one. France, where people don't want to work more than 32 hours a week. In fact, they probably think that's too much, and they go on strike all the time and have this over-entitled socialist liberal attitude. And I got to tell you, it is just really depressing. The European mindset, my ancestral homeland, my birthplace, that mindset is so, And I know these are sweeping generalizations, right? So a sweeping generalization will never be fair. I completely get it. There's a million exceptions to every rule. You know, that's why you shouldn't be a racist, because there's a zillion exceptions to every rule, right? And, you know, you can't judge people like that, right? But generalizations do in life have their place, okay? Let's just be intellectually honest about it, because they're efficient, right? They're not always fair. Of course they're not fair. And any person, any thinking person will listen to a generalization and go like, you know, generally, hey, that's kind of true. But specifically, it's certainly not, okay? So that said, that's my disclaimer about stereotyping, which is wrong, you know, in many ways. I get it. The European mindset is like this small mindset of scarcity versus the American mindset is of abundance. And, you know, Europeans constantly bash Americans because we don't have socialized healthcare. And, you know, I'm like, really? Is that your whole thing? Is that your whole life's thing of free healthcare? That's what you live for? Like, in the U.S., at least a lot of people I know in the States, of course, there's a lot of losers in the U.S. Of course, we all know that. We've all watched Jerry Springer. but you know, many of the people I know, they want to do something great with their life. And here, you know, the Euro mindset is like, well, I got to have free healthcare. And I got to have my big long vacation every year. And, you know, it's like, am I going to make 2,000 euros a month? It's just this getting by mindset. And, you know, an interesting book by Viktor Frankl, which is a, you know, great book, Man's Search for Meaning. It's a landmark book, really. Kind of talked about this is a bit of a leap here, but not too much of one, I don't think. So stay with me before we get to Harry Dent, by the way. That's our guest today. Harry Dent is back on the show. And I'll tell you about that in just a moment, because there's a little odd twist to this Harry Dent interview coming up here. But yeah, you know, Viktor Frankl talked about how people in the concentration camps, when they gave up, they would trade their food for a cigarette. Because, you know, it was just like, F it, right? I'm going to, you know, just indulge before I go, right? That's the kind of attitude. And if you look at Europe, the smoking, it's still so prevalent there. I know it's a leap. I'm not saying that. But I think when people, look at people who want to do something great with their life, they will try to be health conscious. They will try to be fit and they will try to eat right. They will not be smokers, because smoking is like absolute toxic poison, okay? When you're going somewhere and you have a sense of future, of expectation about your life, when you want to do something great with your life, you don't treat your body like crap, okay? As a general rule, that is true. Now, of course, I can see the emails coming, dear listeners. Well, I know all kinds of people that are out of shape and very successful. Well, I didn't say it was just about money. I said it was about mission. It was about the sense of contributing, about doing something big in life. And of course, usually people that do something big in life and make a big contribution tend to get a lot of money thrown at them as well. So, you know, it's a chicken and egg question, right? Chicken and egg, which came first? So, yeah, the European mindset just built on conservation and scarcity and, you know, can you imagine all of the great inventions, right, that took place throughout history? Imagine if the Wright brothers, when they were inventing the airplane, imagine if they had to, every step they took, they had to think about, well, conserve this. What about the environment? What about OSHA? What about all the regulations? You know, all of this stuff. Yeah, they would have never gotten anywhere. They would have just been so bogged down in really secondary concerns, okay? And I admit, as an economist, right, externalities are a legitimate concept. the factory that creates the widgets pollutes, right? And that's called an externality, right? That's a cost outside of the actual cost of producing the product. It's a cost that's forced onto the rest of us, usually, because there will be some degree of externality of pollution that will occur with every bit of production, right? And every economic stimulus, which is what production is an economic stimulus. Anyway, that's enough on that one, but suffice it to say, I'm glad to be back. Now, I want to talk to you about an article real quick, then we'll get to Harry Dent. But first, I don't want to forget a couple things here. Go to, where do you want to go to enter our contest? You want to go to hartmaneducation.com/contest. HartmanEducation.com/contest. We will wrap that contest up here in, about a week. And make sure you enter for the Amazon Echo. I can't wait to get back to my Echoes. I have three of them in my house, listening to my every word. But I can call an Uber car. I can order food. I can ask it a question, trivia, you know, tell me a joke. It's pretty cool. So be sure to enter to win at hartmaneducation.com/contest. And we love your comments and your questions there. And we will get to those on the air as well. So it's a good way for you to participate in and contribute to the show. And we appreciate that as well. Okay, so when I got to my hotel last night, I saw USA Today that I had not seen in many weeks being in Europe. And the cover story was, number of homes for sale sinks to a 20-year low. The number of homes for sale sinks to a 20-year low. And the subtitle is, baby boomers are deciding to stay put, reducing options for first-time buyers. Wow. If this isn't a connection to our guest, Harry Dent, I don't know what else is, okay? Now, Harry, of course, you've heard him on the show. He's been on the show like five times now, and this will be the sixth. But this interview is kind of weird because we screwed up. Yeah, well, I'm not going to even say we. I'm going to say I screwed up. But my screw-up is going to be particularly, I think, interesting to you, the listener. Why? Why is that? Well, it's because, and this happens occasionally, I do this occasionally, I'll record a bunch of interviews, and then I will literally just lose them. Yeah, I know, this is one of them, okay? So I was sorting through some of my old interview recordings, and I found this interview by accident when I was looking for another old interview that never got posted. This was recorded about a year ago. So why is that interesting? Well, it's interesting because Harry Dent is always big on making predictions, and a lot of them don't come true, and a lot of them do come true. And so I think it will be particularly interesting listening to the 1 year ago Harry Dent today on the show, never before published. This is an interview you have not heard, and we will have that here in just a moment. But why is this thing interesting about the subtitle that says baby boomers deciding to stay put, reducing options for first-time buyers? Well, first of all, I think that subtitle to the USA Today article is slightly misleading, because hopefully, at least, in most cases, baby boomers aren't selling a home that a first-time buyer would be buying. Hopefully, they're selling a mid or higher-level home. Now, one of the things that Harry Dent predicted, I started following Harry Dent back in the mid-1990s. Boy, that was a long time ago. Time flies when you're having fun. Okay, so I started following him way back then, have read many, many of his books. And he was one of the people that made a really interesting prediction. And basically, based on demographics, he said that by 2010 to 2013, we will have baby boomers who are cashing out. And the stock market will plunge because they will cash out of stocks to a large degree. And they will cash out of their McMansions. So the prediction way back then, I mean, he made this prediction way in advance, you know, very far out into the future, by just simply looking at the ages of people. okay, and what age they would be in 2010 to 2013. He could easily predict that as a demographer and a demographic economist way back then, right? Because, you know, it's pretty easy to know how old someone's going to be in the future, right? Simple math. And so he predicted that they would cash out of their big McMansions. And that would be a good buying opportunity for both stocks and McMansions. Now, of course, you can't simply use demographics and especially age demographics to predict the entire economy, because as we all know and have learned painfully at times, that there's a lot more to it than that. But this is one thing, and it is interesting. But here, this article is contradicting the very early Harry Dent theory, saying that, hey, the baby boomers, they're just staying put. And the article goes on to say, you know, why people don't plan to sell their homes. Well, 63% of these baby boomers, okay, say that their home meets their needs. Yeah, they don't need to sell it. 16% say they've got a low interest rate mortgage. So, you know, no urgency to sell. 15% recently purchased the home, and 13% say they need to make some improvements. So I don't know exactly what that part means, but it implies to me that instead of moving and selling, they're just going to do a fix-up or a remodel or maybe an addition or something like that. So pretty interesting stuff in light of Harry Dent, and I just wanted to share that with you today. So I think that's about all I've got time for. We've got to get to the interview, but I have so much more to talk to you about, and we'll definitely be doing that on the upcoming episodes. Wednesday will be a 10th episode show, and I'm not sure which one I'm going to run for that. I may not even run a guest. The guest may be yours truly. I don't know. Maybe I'll do the 10th episode show myself. And as you regular listeners know, when we do a 10th episode show, every show that ends in a zero, we go off topic and talk about something of general interest. So we will see what's coming up Wednesday for that. But right now, let's get to Harry Dent. Make sure you go to hartmaneducation.com/contest. And oh, also, make sure you go to jasonhartman.com and click on the events section and get your early bird pricing for our upcoming Meet the Masters of Income Property event in January. Tickets have been selling like hotcakes. I mean, wow. Thank you for all of your support, everybody. We have been selling tickets like crazy. They are flying off the shelf. So be sure to get your tickets for Meet the Masters in January. Early bird pricing in effect, and you can do that at jasonhartman.com. And also, of course, remember, Property Tracker and the 1 hour onboarding for the first 20 people that I talked about on last week's episode. So that will be up in, when it fills up, it'll be up. Okay, here's Harry Dent. It's my pleasure to welcome Harry Dent back to the show. You've heard him on the show several times before. His latest book is, of course, The Demographic Cliff, but he's got a new book coming out very shortly entitled The Sale of a Lifetime. He's also editor of the newsletter Economy and Markets, author of many, many books over the years. I started following his work about 20 years ago. Harry, welcome back. It's great to have you back on the show.
Nice to be back, Jason.
Good to have you. So you are coming to us from your new home in Puerto Rico, huh?
Yeah, and I tell you, I'm loving it. I've had to travel to Australia, and I'm getting ready to go to London. So I haven't been able to spend as much time here as I want, if I would want to. But I tell you, people would be surprised. You hear it's a bankrupt country, you'd never know it where I'm sitting.
Yeah. Good for you. Good for you. And you have not yet taken advantage of these phenomenal Puerto Rico tax rates, these incentives that we have done a few shows on that topic before. It's enough to fill a whole show. So let's not go down that rabbit hole now. But listeners, let me just tell you, if you're considering a move, Puerto Rico's pretty darn attractive if you have your own business and if you can make it work and qualify for these tax incentives. And Harry, I hope you're going to work on that soon, because wow, it's pretty amazing, isn't it?
Oh yeah, I am working on it. I didn't move here for that, because I have a vacation home here, and I decided to put my primary home in San Juan as well. And yes, I am going to work on the tax advantages, and I can probably save maybe 50% of my taxes, not as much as somebody that could go whole hog here, but I tell you, great place to live and unbelievable tax advantages without having to give up your U.S. passport.
It doesn't get much better than Puerto Rico, that's for sure. Well, hey, there's, of course, a lot going on in the world. You've made a lot of predictions over the years. Some have been right on. Some have been some misses, and you admit that, which I like. What's going on now, and what are the latest Harry Dent predictions?
Well, you know, Jason, it's really simple. We've had now three stock bubbles. Two real estate bubbles in the U.S. and many countries, and then massive new real estate bubbles around the world. This is bubble mania. There's never been this many bubbles, this global, around the world, ever, going back even to the 1700s. And I've studied all bubbles. And the funny thing about it, I keep getting on media and debating people, and everybody says, oh, it's not a bubble because of this or because of that. I don't care what the reason is for a bubble. When things start to go up exponentially faster than the fundamental trends, which is very predictable and very trackable, you're in a bubble. If it looks like a bubble, quacks like a bubble, walks like a bubble, it's a bubble. We're in bubbles in everything. And the biggest bubble that has already burst, which we predicted many, many years ago, is the commodity bubble. Commodities are down 60, 70, 80%. Iron ore. Gold's down 40 to 50%. Silver down, you know, 50 to 70%. I mean, I keep telling people, look, when bubbles burst, they don't just correct, they crash. And that's what's happening in more and more markets. And Vancouver's real estate, which I warned a year ago, was going to follow Singapore and put sanctions on foreign buyers. And they did. And they're down 20% in 5 months in real estate. Real estate doesn't crash as fast as stocks. So again, I'm seeing more signs. Well, yes, we've been early about warning about this global modern bubble busting, but it is happening. And I tell you, 2017 is going to be the worst year for the stock market since 1930. And real estate will follow. And the big thing is when China's real estate bubble burst. That's the biggest single bubble in the entire world. And when that goes, it goes all the way around the world in real estate. So I'm telling people, you better love your real estate or get rid of it. You should not even think of being in stocks at this point. So get safe and reinvest when the bubble bursts. It's that simple.
So Harry, first of all, you know, Vancouver, you mentioned Vancouver real estate. I mean, that is far and away the most insanely overvalued real estate on planet Earth. San Francisco's right up there, I think, too. And there are some others, of course. But I want you to just make the distinction for our listeners, if you would, because most people that aren't in real estate, they talk about it kind of generically and they say, well, real estate. But, you know, we always try to divide the world up into three types of markets. The linear markets, those are the boring ones that don't make the news. The cyclical markets, those are Vancouver, San Francisco, all of California, the expensive northeastern markets, South Florida, etc. And then hybrid markets, which are kind of in between the two. I'd put Phoenix in that category, for example, maybe even Atlanta now, almost as a hybrid rather than a linear. And you know, of course, London, Paris, Hong Kong, those are all very cyclical markets. But, you know, when you look at these like boring markets around the world, places like Memphis, where everybody makes one of our local market specialists said, you know, I love Memphis as a rental property owner because everybody makes $40,000 a year and they have a blue collar job. You know, what do you think about those? I mean, do you kind of parse that up at all in your business or not?
Yeah, absolutely. To me, the biggest theme is the greater the bubble, the greater the burst. And in the United States, in between the two great mountain ranges on the east and west, most of the country has not bubbled that much. It didn't bubble that much last time. Hasn't bubbled up this much this time, except now Denver and Dallas and Houston and Austin have bubbled up more around the fracking thing and all. But generally, yeah, if you're in an area where real estate is not bubbled, then it's not going to burst as much. The bubbles are on the coast. It is San Francisco, L.A., Seattle, Vancouver, Boston, New York.
San Diego, Seattle, you know, name them all. Yeah, right.
And like you said, Atlanta and Dallas are in between. You know, I agree with you. We have three layers as well of non-bubble, semi-bubble, and major bubble. And then you go around the world to Dubai, China, Shanghai. Oh, my God.
It's insanity, right? It's total.
800%.
Yeah.
Since 2000. I mean, is that going to crash or what?
Yeah, it has to. It can't do anything else. What goes up must come down, right? And those have gone up just extraordinarily. They're just crazy, crazy markets. The other distinction that people need to make, instead of saying real estate generically, and you've done it so well when you talk about the demographic cliff and really your predictions back to, I believe, the late 90s. I remember you talking about this, how come 2010 to 2013, there are going to be baby boomers getting rid of their large homes, and there will be a McMansion bubble. I don't know if you said McMansion bubble. I think you may have. And so it's not just a matter of segmenting the market geographically and looking at certain cities that are bubble-oriented cyclical cities, but also looking at the product type, right? The small necessity bread-and-butter housing versus McMansions. Can you tell us about that a little bit?
Yes, and vacation and retirement homes. So, yes, I mean, the demographic trends are favoring the everyday starter home, although this new generation is gun-shy about real estate because they've been the first to see it go down in their lifetime. Baby boomers never saw real estate go down, so they thought it can't go down. Well, they're wrong. And then you have the McMansions, which is the peak of the high-end buying, which comes later in the real estate cycle in the early 40s. And nobody's going to need a 4,000 square foot house in the future as their kids leave the nest. And then there's vacation and retirement homes that don't peak until age 63 to 65. And they're the ones that are most discretionary and will crash the most in a downturn, but they will be the fastest to come back because there's one more wave of baby boom buying. But here's the thing, Jason, the most important insight, which I had to work on for many, many years to get. I usually take any sector like real estate and say, okay, peak spending in real estate is age 41, so I just move the birth index forward to see when that's going to peak. I didn't realize that real estate is different. It lasts forever. And when I saw Japan's real estate crash go down and still not bounce 26 years later, I realized, oh my God, real estate lasts forever. And when old people start dying even faster than younger people are rising to buy, because the baby boom was so large a generation and out, you know, ways that even the generation to follow by a bit, that you're never going to have rising net demand for housing again. That housing will, real estate will never be the same.
And that's in Japan. And you so correctly pointed out that Japan's problem is largely, in famous Harry Dent speak, a demographic problem.
And old people are sellers in real estate. And there are 8 million. Now, this is out of 100, and, I don't know, maybe 100 million max, 90 million households in Japan. 8 million houses are vacant. Then you go to China, where they have a different problem, where they overbuilt everything because they're just planning on the future forever with a government-driven top-down economy, which is insane. They've got 27% of condos and houses empty in major cities, and real estate's going up because the Chinese buy real estate. Don't even rent it out. Leave it empty.
They are the biggest speculators, aren't they?
Crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, they really are. They really are. Well, what about in the U.S., though? I mean, the population is expanding. Granted, our economy is built on a house of cards, which pretty much every economy around the world is. So I don't know if we're that much worse off, as crazy as we are over here. You know, what are your thoughts about some of these, more linear markets? I mean, are you okay with those? You think there will just be a waiver if this bubble bursts as you say it's going to? Or what do you think?
No, bubbles only burst. When real estate bubbles burst, it's typically 50 to 60% down. Stocks burst 70, 80, 90% down. Commodities 80, 90%. And commodity bubbles burst every 30 years, just as we saw in after 1920 and 1980 and now 2008, 2011 recently. And stock bubbles come now every generation, especially every other one, like the 1930s and now. And these things don't just correct linearly, and they don't build linearly. They build exponentially, and they crash. Stocks crash twice as fast as they build. Real estate takes about the same time for a bubble to build to crash, and so do commodities. And commodities crash the most. So, again, in my new book, The Sale of a Lifetime, I developed a bubble model. The best one is around stocks. Stocks will crash twice as fast as the bubble builds. And you don't measure the bubble from when the last low was in the last bear market. You measure when the trends go exponential versus the linear trends you talked about. That's when you say, this is when the bubble's beginning. And bubbles tend to go back to where they started. So when bubbles burst, all these economists and political experts say, oh, that was a black swan. I'm like, they're idiots. This is not a black swan. Bubbles build systematically, exponentially, and then they burst even more exponentially, especially with stocks. And so we can predict that. And we're saying, look, this stock bubble is going to burst. And it's going to probably take into late 2019, early 2020. And it's going to go back down to at least a Dow of 5,500 and probably back down to 3,800 to 4,000 where the bubble started. This is not guessing. This is what bubbles do. If you look at them, which nobody does, because the reason, Jason, people don't understand bubbles or see them is they don't want them to stop. You're getting something for nothing.
Right. It's like being drunk. You don't want it to stop. It's fun, you know? Yeah, interesting. Well, so last time you were on the show, I mean, and you've made some pretty risky predictions over the years. I got to give you credit for sticking your neck out like that. Last time you were on the show, you were talking about how gold was going to go down to $750 and maybe even down to $250 per ounce. And it's at $1,338 now. Of course, it was at this crazy peak of almost, it's like $1,900 and something, I think, at the peak a few years ago. What do you think is happening with gold? I mean, that prediction hasn't come true yet. Or were you too early with it? Or did you change your mind? Or I'm just curious.
No. Jason, in late April of 2011, when silver hit $48.
That was crazy.
At the top, all the way back to 1980, we said, sell this sucker.
You were right about that.
And said silver and gold. And gold actually ended up going about 5% higher into September and then crashed $750 from 1800 to 1050. And when it went to 1050 in late 2015, we said gold is due to bounce again, a bear market rally, not a new rally. And it has. I said gold's going to go to around 1400. Well, it got to 1373. It may yet get to 1400. I doubt it.
Yeah.
And I think the next move is down to 700, 750 in the next year or two.
Wow.
And here's the thing, Jason, people didn't get. Gold saw. It's been bubbling up since 2001 after bottoming, after being down for 18 years or something, since its peak in 1980. It rallied the most after 2008 when it saw this unprecedented money printing. And of course, the natural assumption is
inflation.
If they're printing money, we're going to get inflation. Well, we didn't get inflation because we've been saying debt deleveraging bubbles deleveraging creates deflation. It kills money. And that's, and gold got this in late 2012, early 2013. The Japanese went triple down on quantitative easing. Mm-hmm. And shortly after that, Europe came back and said, we're going back for more, the bazooka from Mario Draghi. And guess what? Inflation kept going down.
Yeah, right. Well, Harry,
holy crap, we've been making the wrong assumption. We thought this would create hyperinflation. It's not. And gold died. And it will never come back for a number of years. And you know what will make it come back? The next 30-year commodity cycle in emerging countries who are much more commodity-intensive. We may see the biggest gold and commodity rally in history, but it'll only come from the early 2020s to the late 2030s when most gold bugs are dead.
They've been wiped out, right? Yeah. And I'm definitely not a gold bug, so don't worry about that. But it sounds like you're pretty bearish on everything. Is there, what is your recommendation right now? Just keep your powder dry, don't do anything? Or is it, linear, boring real estate, or what is it?
Cash flow positive real estate in not so overvalued areas can be good. That's the only sector. Running out to these rising millennials and maybe some retiring baby boomers. But otherwise, yes, it's get out of the way of the bubble. Be in cash, and or if you want to take some risk, short gold, stocks, short real estate oriented indexes. But I tell you, most people I'd say just sleep well at night. You've had the greatest bubble in history, giving you unbelievable gains beyond any time. Just take it. Take your chips off the table and wait for this bubble to crash. And it'll crash faster in some areas like stocks and commodities, which have already crashed mostly, and slower in real estate and stuff. And just buy back in the next 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years. And you'll be like Joseph Kennedy in the early 30s. He sold out
right.
1929 and bought everything in the bottom at 80, 90% off. That's the way to make money in deflation. There is nowhere to make money because nothing goes up in deflation except maybe the highest quality.
And as you pointed out on the last time I had you on the show, though, it's in a deflationary or stagnationary environment. The only thing you can hope for is yield. There's nothing else. There's no capital appreciation, obviously. It's a yield game entirely.
There's no yield except high yield bonds, which are going to get crucified the most.
Yeah, yeah.
Highest risk.
But that linear cash flowing real estate gives you a pretty good yield, even if the price of it goes down, with all the multidimensional aspects. If you can make 20-25% annually while everybody else is just getting creamed, relatively speaking, you're doing okay, right?
Yes, and I agree with that because the millennials who aren't buying are forced to rent more now, and so the rents will hold up. Even though the real estate values go down, and then if you're in this market of buying multifamily apartments and stuff and complexes and renting them out, only if you can do it at positive cash flow, then when they go down in price, you can buy more of them at a lower price and do the same thing. So that is the one good strategy I see, but only in the right areas. You can't do that in South Beach, Miami. You can't.
No, God, no.
Francisco or Vancouver, could you possibly buy something and rent it out at positive cash flow when it's so overvalued? No way.
Let me tell you about this ridiculous property. I was just, surveying the Vancouver real estate market a few weeks ago. It's so insane. It's absolutely psychotic. This house was, it was about 1,000 square feet. It was $2,495,000, I believe, basically $2.5 million. And it was old. I don't know how old it was, but I just couldn't believe it. Where I spent most of my adult life in Irvine, Newport Beach, Southern California, you know, I thought the prices were nuts there. Vancouver is insane. And most of that is attributable to that Chinese money. I mean, it's strange how like Chinese and Middle Eastern buyers are so willing to be so speculative. They just don't seem to care about fundamentals of yield, cash flow, cap rate. It's all just buy these properties in these trophy areas. And it's just nuts. I don't get it.
Jason, it's real simple. They're the dumb money right now. Oh. They have so much, the same thing with the Japanese in the late 80s.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
It goes up in a bubble. You have unprecedented wealth for no good reason. And then you tend to just blow it. You think, oh, I'm a genius.
Right.
And you buy more and more real estate at overvalued prices, and you're setting up yourself to lose.
Absolutely.
Unbelievably. And so the Chinese are the dumbest buyers. They're the ones paying $100 million for an 8,000 square foot box on Central Park in New York. This is crazy.
It's psychotic. You know, everybody's a genius in a bull market. When you look back to the late 80s and the 90s and, you know, the Japanese buyers, they bought Rockefeller Center and, you know, paid the taxes on it for several years nicely and then sold it back at a lower price. It's a pretty great deal for the U.S., isn't it?
That's what happens. The smart money becomes the dumb money at the top.
Yeah, and it's just crazy.
Chinese, I'm telling you, the Chinese real estate bubble is so extreme compared to the fundamentals there that it's going to burst. And when that bubble bursts, it, even more than the Japanese and more than any U.S. investors, they have so much. People can't realize that Chinese save like 30, 40, 50, 60, 70% of their income, unheard of here. And then they put it 75% into real estate and the other part in cash because they don't even invest in stock. There's no way to understand how the collapse of the Chinese real estate bubble that again is up 600, 700, 800, 900% in the last 20 years, is going to impact especially the most affluent families and investors in China, and they're going to pull back on everything. They're not going to be buying in San Francisco anymore, or Boston, or New York, or Miami, or London, or Vancouver, which is the worst. That's why Vancouver's dropped the most thus far. The Chinese buying there is the most intense of any major city I've measured in the world. They love Canada. They love Vancouver. They want their money. You have to realize the Chinese are not just, they're not buying real estate so much. They're getting their money out of China in a way that they're not allowed to. $50,000 a year. If they buy a $20 million condo, they get $20 million out of their country and it's still legal.
Yeah, they've got two issues. Number one, they've got a potential currency arbitrage. They've got a potential to make money on the real estate, which of course they won't. We just discussed that. But they also get the Brinks truck factor. You know, they're basically fleeing their own government in essence and doing it legally by buying U.S. real estate, right?
Yes, that's exactly. You got it, Jason. That's exactly what they're doing. They're laundering money out of China because they know. The smart people, the richest people in China know it's a top-down communist government. It's overbuilding, overinvesting, over in debt faster than any emerging country in all of history, and the bubble's going to go down. So they want to get out ahead of it. They're the smart money. But they're buying dumb real estate in the U.S., in the U.K., in Canada, in Singapore. Because they want to buy in English-speaking countries where they can send their children to get a good education and learn English. So that's the countries that are most bubbling. And these are these cities, San Francisco to London, Vancouver to Singapore. They're going to burst the most when the Chinese realize they're screwed and they don't have any money left.
Yeah. It sure is. It's amazing. Harry, give out your website and tell people they can find out more about you, and then maybe give us one closing thought.
Yeah, Jason. I mean, harrydent.com. You can get on our free daily newsletter, Economy and Markets. They tend to offer my latest book, The Demographic Cliff, and then soon The Sale of a Lifetime. If you just pay for shipping, $4.95, and that's real cost. And then for more about us, dentresearch.com, you can see all of our services. But we just tell people, look, get on our free newsletter, get to know us, because we're really different, but we have very good insights, as we've tried to show here. And then, hey, if you love us, trade up, but you can listen to us for free on our free newsletter.
Good stuff. Well, Harry Dent, just a closing thought. Anything you want to just wrap it up? Any maybe a question I didn't ask you or anything?
Yeah, I mean, real simple. I study long-term cycles, not just short-term, mostly long-term. And this is the greatest reset that is going to happen in the debt bubble and the financial asset bubble in our lifetimes, the greatest since the early 1930s. Imagine if you had gotten out of the market in late 1929, like Joseph Kennedy, and then waited until late 1932 to reinvest, you could have bought roach crap in 1932 or 33, or any real estate or any surviving company, and made money for decades and decades to follow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, fantastic.
It's the sale of a lifetime.
Absolutely. Harry Dent, thank you so much for joining us.
Okay, thank you, Jason.
Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. Be sure to check out the show's specific website and our general website, hartmanmedia.com, for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guest opinions are their own. And if you require specific legal or tax advice or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. And we also very much appreciate you reviewing the show. Please go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio or whatever platform you're using and write a review for the show. We would very much appreciate that. And be sure to make it official and subscribe so you do not miss any episodes. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.